Hey, this is Todd Stacy.
And this is Caroline Beck.
Welcome to In the Weeds with Alabama Daily News. And Caroline, welcome back. It's been a few podcasts since you've joined us, but we're eager to have you back. I get criticized when you're not on the podcast. So I'm glad that we could make this work today. But you've been traveling a little bit.
Yeah, I've been gone for a little bit. I spent a week in Colorado, which was nice because I could actually be outside and enjoy the weather instead of suffering with all y'all down here.
Oh my gosh, you did miss about the hottest week in this year. Hottest week I can really remember in a long time.
I timed it perfectly.
Well, I think we saved a little bit of hot weather for you coming back.
Oh, I'm sure.
But glad you're back. Glad to have you back on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And so this past week, I finally got the chance to interview Martha Roby, Congresswoman Martha Roby, who I used to work for.
Yeah, exactly.
And she decided not to run for Congress, made the announcement. The very last day of the Congress, I found that interesting. She was going. They always recess for August.
Yeah.
Come back home and do a bunch of district work. And the last day of that, the last day before leaving, she announced it. Mm-hmm. Actually, it was on her birthday.
Oh yeah, right.
And so, really shocked the political world because, nobody really had expected her to decide not to run again this time. Nobody had that on their board, so she really surprised a lot of people, and then went dark. She actually, we'll talk about this when we get to the interview.
Yeah,
she went to like the Caribbean or somewhere.
Oh, nice.
Nobody could answer any questions.
Yeah, just drop a bomb and leave. It's a good method.
That's what she said. She said, "I dropped the mic and I'm gone." But we finally got a chance to, if she was in the district and she was had some public appearances, got a chance to catch up with her to really ask why. And I know that you covered her campaign a little bit as you were first getting started.
Right, yeah. It was like the first thing, I think first person I really talked to was like an Alabama representative was Martha Roby. So it was really cool. So how long exactly did you work for Representative Roby?
I worked for her from 2012 to 2017, so that's 5 years, a little more than 5 years.
Okay.
So that was a pretty good little stretch.
Yeah, and so I think, at least one of the things that I first remember hearing about Roby was about her comments regarding Trump when he was a candidate. So were you there for all of that? Yeah, sure. What? Tell me your experience of dealing with all that.
I certainly was there. Yeah, and it was. You know, and unfortunately, that's sort of what, like you said, it's one of the first things that you remember hearing about her, you know, kind of coming in with a clean slate. And it's not fair that that's what people will tend to remember about her, because there was a ton of other great stuff.
Yeah.
But obviously a huge deal, huge ordeal, something that I don't think anybody who was working as a part of that we'll ever forget. A very interesting story, interesting experience that maybe we'll talk more about after she leaves office. But she was a subject of just intense criticism as a result of that. A lot of it was just completely unfair, and the reason why was really because she never backed down. It wasn't a lot of people. After that Access Hollywood tape came out and Trump was bragging about grabbing women as sexual assault, a lot of people said this is not right and everything. She's the only one that really never backed away from her criticism.
Right.
And so I was always very proud of her for that. I think history will treat her very well on that. Another thing I think about in relation to the Trump episode, because you can't forget that she ended up getting reelected and with the president's endorsement.
Right.
So, so just think about that. That was pretty impressive. But what I also think about, just with the benefit of longer perspective, having worked for her, go back a year before that, and she was on the Benghazi committee.
Right.
A select committee to investigate Benghazi. And she had the interaction with Hillary Clinton that really made Clinton crack. She had gone through 8 hours of testimony or whatever, and Martha's interaction with her really kind of drew out like a laugh and kind of this moment that really shook just the whole narrative. And mm-hmm. and I'm telling you, I'll never forget just our Twitter account and our Facebook account and just like online just and emails.
Explosions.
Yeah. It just, like the Clinton machine just descended upon her and just bombarded her with the nastiest of comments. And this is just, this is the Clinton and the liberal side of it.
Right.
And if it gets worse than what we saw, I don't want to know it.
Yeah.
And so a year later,
it's
Trump, and it's the Trump world,
side.
And it's the MAGA crowd, and it is just as intense and just as awful. Mm-hmm. And so I think Martha is unique in that she has seen both sides, the worst of the online vitriol from both sides. Yeah. I don't know any other, maybe there are some, but I don't know any other candidate or politician that has dealt with the worst of both sides in this stuff. So.
Yeah.
It certainly a very meaningful and poignant time to be working for.
Yeah. So tell me what it was like working for her.
Oh, it was great. Besides the online trolls. Yeah.
Yes.
It was great.
Besides that. Yeah.
Working for Martha was a tremendous honor. She is, mm-hmm. well, besides just being a good boss, she's different as a congressman. She's. Young, relatively young, got a mother to two children. They live here in the district, so they're very grounded.
Yeah,
here that's as opposed to a lot of older, politicians and everything. So that means she's also closer in age to the staff that works for her, and that makes for just interesting relationships and dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
For staff as well, because most of us aren't used to that, and so it was is different and fun.
Mm-hmm.
She also was just involved in a lot of big issues. I mean, to go back to 2011 and 12 with the Budget Control Act and sequestration and just these budget battles that go on. People forget how crazy that was.
Mm-hmm.
She was right in the middle of it, especially on the military side, representing these two military bases, right in the middle of that stuff. The Farm Bill.
Mm-hmm.
They had a huge fight over the Farm Bill in that 2013-2014 range. Huge fight. She's right in the middle of it. Gets criticized from both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the VA scandal.
Yeah,
she's right in the middle of that because one of the biggest scandals, second to Phoenix, really, was right here in Montgomery with the crack house and the mismanaged or the mismanagement and all this kind of stuff. Huge, she's right in the middle of that, exposed all that.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned Benghazi, so she obviously I can't say enough nice things about her in terms of being a boss, but it was fun also to work for her because, generally speaking, she was involved in very big issues in very meaningful ways all along that stretch there. And that's what you want as a staffer. That's what you want as politicos, to sort of be in the middle of things. And she definitely was.
Oh, cool. So I guess the big question of the day or right now is, why is she retiring?
and we'll let her say it in her own words here in a minute. We'll get to the interview. And I certainly don't want to put words in her mouth. She has been very careful. She's been very coy to say exactly why.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason for that. I mean, think about this. There are only a handful of reasons why a member of Congress will decide not to run again.
Mm-hmm.
It's either, they got beat, or they're going to get beat.
Yeah.
They know they can't win.
Right.
Maybe they got too old, got unhealthy, got sick.
Yeah, health reasons.
Maybe they got another job,
moved,
found its opportunity, wanted to go lobby or wanted to run for Senate or something like that.
Yeah.
So there's a handful of reasons why it's typical that they don't run again. She fits none of those categories.
Right.
So people naturally, we in the media, just everybody wants to say, why?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I think it's really just important to take her at her word, that it's just time. And you'll hear her say that in our discussion.
Mm-hmm.
It's just time. It's easy to forget that, look, it's been 10 years.
Right.
When this term is up, she'll have been in Congress 10 years.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty good little
It's a good chunk of time.
Mm-hmm. And a lot, like you said, a lot has gone on during that time. So, it really is just time.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason she was not going to go out and say, pinpoint on one thing is because that becomes the story.
Right.
If tomorrow she said, or if in our interview she said, I was tired of it.
Yeah.
Then that would be the quote, and that would be the story. And And not only that, but people could take that and extrapolate what they wanted. So,
right.
You know, Martha Roby says she's tired of Trump. Mm-hmm. You know, Martha Roby says she's tired of Congress, or she's tired of the squad, or whatever.
Squad.
She's tired. Yeah. Or she's tired of whatever. You could just,
right.
That's just an example. If she says something specific, they can take from that and do other things. And so, I actually, she's been very disciplined message-wise, which, hey, I'm very impressed. And so I think that's one reason why she's been coy. Mm-hmm. But I think you'll hear during our conversation, she may not point to it explicitly, but clearly there are other factors. Mm-hmm. Clearly it's not the same mm-hmm. as it was when she got started.
Right.
We talk about toxicity mm-hmm. in politics and in culture and how it's just not, the hard workers aren't really rewarded. It's the bomb throwers now. That's
okay.
That's different. Now, is that why she's retiring, or is that why she's not going to run again?
Yeah.
No, but it's probably a part of it.
Yeah.
Just the back and forth between Trump and the squad, and that's just, man, it sucks up so much oxygen. Is that the reason why?
Yeah.
No, but I bet you it's part of it. You get to see how, or hear how accumulation of things can maybe add up to that factor. But I'd also remind people of this. Mm-hmm. Margaret, her oldest, is just entered ninth grade.
Mm-hmm.
George, her son, is just started fifth grade, which is just hard to believe. Just watching these kids grow up.
Yeah.
And I could understand as a mother saying, all right, well, I'd like to spend more of that time at home, especially when it's not the same. You're not going up. When you get in that plane every week, it's one thing when you're going to fight the good fight mm-hmm. and like take on some of these tough things that she has over her career.
Yeah.
Being in a minority, being not outside of the bomb throwing ridiculousness that's going on, it's not necessarily the case. I think this new era and this new shift in the very nature of Congress makes it kind of hard to be terribly effective.
Yeah.
And so, when you get on that airplane, it's got to be a little tougher every day.
Right.
And so I don't blame her at all for wanting to mm-hmm. take a step back. Let's give somebody else an opportunity.
Yeah.
And see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of giving other people opportunities, we've so far heard of three official people or candidates who are trying to run for her seat right now.
Yeah, three have announced. And
yes, exactly. And one of them being Jeff Coleman, who's a businessman from Dothan, and he recently chaired the Business Council of Alabama, and says that he wants to model his campaign off of Tennessee Governor Bill Lee, who successfully ran as an outsider businessman in a field of politicians.
Yeah. In fact, he kind of broke his campaign news with me in Alabama Daily News.
Mm-hmm.
I've known Jeff a while, and when you meet him and you get to see him on TV, you'll know, like, okay, yeah, he looks like a candidate. He looks like he could be a congressman.
Mm.
Kind of... has that businessman aura that appeals to a lot of Republicans.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing right now, as we sort of get this field lined up, is he's pretty wealthy. Like, he owns Coleman Worldwide Trucking, and that's basically a moving company.
Okay.
So it's been very successful, and he can self-fund. He can put in...
Right.
Anywhere from $500,000, maybe even closer to $1 million.
Mm, mm-hmm.
Well, in a very short campaign, this mm-hmm. thing's going to be over in March.
Right.
That matters a lot. There's not going to be anybody else that can come close to that, especially $2,800 at a time. So mm-hmm. that makes him immediately a front runner.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond the money, he will be a formidable candidate because he's kind of, I don't know, he's dynamic, he's out there, he looks like a candidate.
Yeah, yeah. And another candidate that's been out there is Will Dismukes, who's a recently elected state representative from Prattville, and he's only a 29-year-old, and he's flirted with running for the Senate, but he's now officially announced that he wants to run for Roby's seat.
Yeah, and I know you're covering the House, you probably...
Yes, I've talked to him a few times,
right.
Yeah.
And see, I'm from Prattville, so right. I mean, he's, I guess you'd say, my hometown representative.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he kind of shocked the world, or at least our little small political world here.
Yeah.
By defeating two other older, more maybe more established candidates in that Prattville race.
Yeah.
So, you know, 29 years old, right. You know, wow, he's really got a future. I don't think anybody expected him to be so quick to right. On the draw for that future.
Yeah.
Yeah. When we say he running for when we say he flirted with running for the U.S. Senate, mm-hmm. that was for real. I mean, he was telling people, "I am running for Senate," mm-hmm. and in just to consider that he had only. He's still not been elected for a year, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
He was elected in 2018.
Yeah, yeah.
So I mean, it's a little strange, right. But mm-hmm. You know, maybe he'll prove everybody wrong, and
he'll be that outsider candidate,
right?
That young blood coming in.
Right.
No,
29 years old, just got elected, has not been serving in office yet, even a year.
Yeah,
but we'll see.
Okay. Well, there's also Barry Moore, who's the former state representative from Enterprise. And he actually challenged Roby in the last Republican primary. Mm-hmm. And he's good friends with Cliff Sims, who famously worked in the White House and wrote that book about his time there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've known Barry a while. He, when I was working in the legislature, he was one of that freshman class that came in and did a lot. The one thing I'd say about his candidacy is last time he ran, you know, he targeted Roby. He was mm-hmm. he said, you know, he got in early saying, "I'm gonna mm-hmm. run against Martha Roby," and it was a big contrast because he was running as, "I'm 100% behind Trump 100% of the time."
Right.
And in contrast to Martha, who had, you know, criticized his comments about grabbing women. Mm-hmm. And so he had that Martha Roby was his foil. Mm. Mm-hmm. Now she's not there, so I'm not really sure you can always support Trump, but I think pretty much everybody in the field,
right?
Everybody in the field is going to say,
given.
"I support
yeah.
Trump." So
mm-hmm.
I don't know where he goes with that, because she was sort of the focal point mm-hmm. of that, and that's gone now. But yeah, Enterprise. So that at least gives Jeff Coleman some competition for the Wiregrass mm-hmm. vote.
Right. Okay. What about other potential candidates we've been hearing about? Like, what about Bobby Bright?
I expect Bobby Wright to get in. He, mm-hmm. he's the former congressman. He switched, became a Republican last time, and at least took Roby to the runoff. I expect him to run. He bought a campaign domain.
Yeah.
So that's typically the first thing you do to reserve.
Good sign. Mm-hmm.
The one thing I'll say, though, is that when he was in that runoff with Roby last time, mm-hmm. The president endorsed Martha mm-hmm. and then kind of dunked on Bright a little bit.
Right,
He was like, "Bright's a Democrat, supports yeah. Nancy Pelosi," all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Those tweets aren't going to go away.
Yeah.
And so he's
yeah.
going to have a tough time kind of overcoming that.
That's true.
Because, I mean, look, when the president tweets mm-hmm. to much of the Republican electorate, that is gospel.
Yes.
And so,
yeah, that's very
But I do expect him to run.
Okay. What about Twinkle Kavanaugh?
Twinkle, I said from day one, she would be a very formidable candidate in this race, just because if you look at the numbers from 2018 in her lieutenant governor race, mm-hmm. it's very strong in all of these counties.
Yeah.
She was pulling near 70% in Houston County in Dothan.
Right.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
She was pulling like 55% in Coffee County. That's Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
Doing very well in Montgomery.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually think, yeah, she'd be a tremendous candidate. I don't know if she's going to run, though, mm-hmm. For a couple of reasons. Number one, she has a good job. She's mm-hmm. the president of the Public Service Commission and would mm-hmm. would have to risk that
right.
in order to run for Congress. So that's number one. Number two, she actually doesn't live in the 2nd District as the lines are currently drawn.
Uh-huh.
Now, there's no requirement that you must,
yeah.
but it's still like, it's kind of tough.
Yeah.
It would be tough out the gate. Like, well, it's an easy attack for your opponents.
Exactly.
I mean, you could always move in and do it that way, but it's just, that's a tough thing to get over immediately.
Yeah, yeah. What about Jim Byard?
Former Mayor Prattville. I've known Jim a long time, and he's always talked about as a candidate for the future. Just because he was very popular as mayor, you know, mm-hmm. that's why he got appointed to a DECA director.
Mm-hmm.
And what that job does is give you kind of connections all around the state in terms of federal grants and mm-hmm. making those kind of connections. So I think he'd be a great candidate.
Mm-hmm.
He would certainly compete with this Mukes and some of these others for the Montgomery,
right?
You know, the northern Montgomery.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how serious he is about running, maybe I would put him as a maybe, mm-hmm. but he would be a good candidate in the race.
Okay. What about Chris Sells?
Yeah, you know, mm-hmm. state representative from Greenville, mm-hmm. Butler County. Mm-hmm. That's one sort of corner of the district that is forgotten sometimes because mm-hmm. there's so much Wiregrass and there's so much
yeah.
Montgomery and Prattville.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Greenville's sitting down there. That could be an interesting little dynamic that he brings to it. I don't know how serious he is either,
mm-hmm.
But he's certainly gotten some, some chatter going about his candidacy. And you know, mm-hmm. he's a young lawyer, impressive guy in the legislature in terms of what he can do
mm-hmm.
or what he's been able to do. Mm-hmm. The geography makes me think it's interesting just because
yeah.
I don't remember the last time somebody ran from that corner.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And how about Troy King?
This is another one that people talk about all the time. In fact, the last time I posted a possible candidate list, I got two calls saying, hey, put Troy King on that list because he could do it.
Mm-hmm.
So Troy King is from Elba. That's Coffee County. And mm-hmm. if you look at, and look, his most recent campaign was unsuccessful. He ran for attorney general again.
Mm-hmm.
He made it to a runoff, but pretty much got trounced in the runoff by Steve Marshall.
Yeah.
But if you go look at some of those returns in the counties that make up the second district, he did pretty well
mm.
in both the mm-hmm. Primary and the runoff. And so mm-hmm. that would, just that alone, I've not talked to Troy King, but just looking at the numbers alone, you had to say, well, we ought to at least try to give it a look.
Yeah.
Just because, man, I picked up some. Now, what does that mean compared to other candidates on the ballot? You can't ever know. But
mm-hmm.
If you're Twinkle and you're Troy King,
mm-hmm.
and you look at just how you compare, you know, just how you did in 2018, in those counties, you'd be like, be foolish not to at least consider it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Look, I don't know how many of those candidates are going to get in or how many won't. Who knows? But in the next several weeks, I think you'll see. At least two or three other candidates get in. I think you're talking about a five to six candidate field here of serious candidates mm-hmm. at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I expect.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll obviously be watching out for those people to see if they do become candidates or come in. But let's get back to talking about who actually has the seat right now.
Right.
So your interview with Martha Roby, what happened?
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate the time mm-hmm. that they allowed me just to catch up with her on the road, because those are some, man, they're built up like one mm-hmm. meeting after the other.
Yeah.
I mean, look, it's in part, it's like catching up as friends.
Right.
And you can't, it's fun to be able to talk through things, but sometimes it doesn't even feel like you're doing it for necessarily the media. You're just catching up.
Mm-hmm.
So I really want them to know why. Mm-hmm. And she talks through it a little bit, but remains a little coy. But I think mm-hmm. I think overall it paints a picture as why somebody in her position would step away, even though there's no risk of really losing her seat.
Right.
She talks about the nature of politics right now, that it's just unfortunate and, mm-hmm. and so ugly.
Mm-hmm.
I hope people will listen to that and understand that you know the consequences of really negative and nasty speech online. We talked about some of her legacy. She's not gone yet. She's not, you know,
right.
But there are certain things that I just asked her what she was most proud of, what she would, what would go down as something that she actually worked hard on and accomplished as an individual member of Congress. And I found that interesting. But overall, basically a follow up, because she shocked the political world by announcing she was not running again,
mm-hmm.
dropped the mic, mm-hmm. went on vacation. So that allows some time to like really think about it. And I think we had a really good conversation about just why that was and what's next mm-hmm. In the future.
Okay.
So here's Martha Roby mm-hmm. in the weeds. Hey, Martha.
Hey, Todd.
How are you?
I'm good. Very good.
You had a busy day?
It has been a good day. It's been a good week on the road. Always love being home in August, getting to spend time with my constituents, and it's been very productive.
Anything like happening in particular that's like keeps coming up? I don't know. Anything in the news?
No, nothing in the news.
Unfortunately, when you announce that you're not going to run for Congress again, that's pretty much all you're going to get asked about, right?
Well, I kind of went off the grid. I mean, I did a mic drop and went on family vacation and turned my phone off. I tried to return as many messages, and the very kind messages, by the way, before I left town. But we knew we were going on this family vacation. So as you can imagine, when I turned my phone back on after we got back, I was a little bit overwhelmed in a positive way by the number of people who have reached out to me to thank me for my service. And really, I mean, this opportunity, even you giving me this opportunity today, is about thanking the people that I represent and that have given me this amazing opportunity to serve in the Congress. You know, Riley and Margaret and George, I mean, we will forever be grateful for this opportunity to serve our country. And I don't mind being asked about it because I really want the opportunity to show the people in Alabama's 2nd District how grateful I truly am that they've put confidence in me. But I'm not going anywhere. So I'm still here for a year and a number of months, and I think there's still work to do, and I've got a few fights left in me, so I'm ready to continue to have my sleeves, you know, to roll up my sleeves and work for the people that I represent.
Well, and the frustrating thing about TV and print and a lot of media is you get that 8-second soundbite, and you get 50 words maybe in a story to really where you maybe you talked for 5 minutes. So, but this format, you get as much time as you want. So let me just ask you, what, in your own words, why did you decide not to run?
Really, it was just after a lot of prayer and a lot of consideration that Riley and I made the decision that it was time to close this chapter. I mean, I have no plans. I know that's the next question, right? What's next?
It's way down. it's way down on my list.
Well, it's coming.
The why. I was taught to lead with the why. So.
I don't know who told you that. No, it's always a good question to ask. I think it's important when you're trying to make the point and say, why are we doing this? So. Sure. I mean, I just think it's time. You know, my name has been on a ballot for the last 16 years of my life. I love public service. I love this job. I think there's a lot of speculation out there right now about, you know, why I would do this. And that's fair. That's fair. But truly, it is just, it's just time.
When exactly did you make the call? You must have been thinking about it for a while, but was there a point at which it was okay? Yeah, now
we have been thinking about it for a while, and I really wanted to run for re-election another time. And look, that was a tough battle, and I'm so grateful that I was able to win my last election, because I just felt like there was some unfinished business, and there still is. And so again, I have an extremely grateful heart that I have gotten this opportunity to have these 2 years in Congress to continue the work that I've started. But I know at the end of this term, it's time to walk away, and I have a tremendous amount of peace about it.
You talked a little bit this morning about the toxic political environment that we're in. I mean, and look, it was bad 2 years ago, and I can't imagine how much worse it's gotten since then. So how much does that factor in? I mean, it must be even if it's not a factor, it must be a relief to know that you're not having to deal with it much longer.
I mean, look, I answered a number of questions this morning about, you know, why I'm not doing this. And again, it's fair to ask those questions and try to pinpoint it down to one thing. And again, I'm just going to say to you, it's not one thing. It's just a prayerful consideration that it's time to close this chapter. And we've reached that decision, and we're in a good place about it. But what I said this morning when I was asked about, you know, civil discourse and partisanship in Congress was, you know, first and foremost, I want to start on a positive note, which is I want everybody in this room to know that the majority of the people that I serve with on both sides of the aisle, even if I disagree with their ideology, they're there for the right reasons, and they love this country. But what's deeply troubling to me not just as an elected official, but as a mom of a 14-year-old and a 10-year-old, is the way we now communicate with one another. And all it takes is picking up your phone or your laptop, and anybody can say anything about anybody else without consequence. And it is different than it was 10 years ago. There's no question it is. And it's not one person's fault. It's a shared responsibility amongst elected officials, but it's also a shared responsibility for every household in America about how we are teaching our children, but how we as adults are providing an example for our children about what it means to be kind and to be civil and to agreeably disagree. And so we've just, I mean, what I've said is the pendulum has swung so far. I just am prayerful that it's gonna come back the other direction, but it's gonna take a real consciousness in all of us to think about what we're saying to each other, because words matter. And there's a person behind the words, and there's a person that the words are being directed to.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it's just like, it's exhausting. It's, I mean, talk about swinging back the other way. The whole thing, I don't know how people have the energy to just be so mad all the time.
Yeah, and I mean, if you share a different opinion, now you just get shouted down. I mean, there's no effort to try to listen to one another or to try to understand where the other person is coming from. I mean, I've used the example, and you've heard it a million times, of the Catfish Amendment. You know, Terry Sewell and I worked tirelessly to make sure that this amendment wasn't in the Farm Bill because it would severely hurt Alabama's catfish farmers, and we were able to defeat it not once, but get it stripped out a second time through conference committee, and it was through our combined efforts. And I mean, people may chuckle, the Catfish Amendment, but it would have really hurt our economy in Alabama and the number of people that are in that industry. That was Terry Sewell and I working together for the benefit of Alabama, and it will never be reported because it's not sensational enough to make the news. But my point is these kinds of things happen in Congress every single day. And, you know, pick a network, you're gonna hear whatever the tweet that day was, or whatever the issue du jour is. And what's really troubling about it is that there's so much work that we have to do on behalf of the American people, and all of these distractions are taking away from that very important work. And so, you know, I mean, Congress has always been frustrating. That's not new, right? It's a slow, tedious process that you have to work through to get, hopefully, a good result. But it just seems even more recently that we have all these other distractions that take away from the real work that we need to be doing.
Well, yeah, because it used to be that the bomb throwers, like, they got some attention, but it was the serious people still dominated the conversation.
Now they get all the attention.
Absolutely. So, like, the media environment, whether it's cable news, Twitter, just the entire media universe, rewards, you know, the bomb throwers on both sides. And so, and you're not a bomb thrower. You're
right.
A worker, however you want to classify it, but you're not the one that goes and says the crazy thing that's going to get covered. So that's got to be frustrating, because you're talking about, like, especially, you know, somewhere like appropriations where things have to get done, but it's not sensational. So that's got to be a little frustrating to see all that, and that's all that people see and understand about Congress.
Well, I mean, it's frustrating, but the rewarding part is that we're still doing our work. So even in the minority as an appropriator, I have a strong voice for Alabama. I wish people could see the Appropriations Committee up close, because they would see the decorum and the way Congress works as it was intended. Yes, we still have disagreements on policy, no doubt, but we are respectful and we work with one another. And we try to make space. And even in the minority, my chairman of my subcommittees, you know, accepted a lot of the requests in the base bill that were important to my district and my state. So, you know, I hear what you're saying in terms of it doesn't get attention in media, but what's more important to me is that the work is actually getting done. And then it's incumbent upon me to come home and tell the people that I represent what we were able to do, because they're not going to hear it, you know, anywhere else.
But yeah, positive catfish amendment doesn't get
right.
Fox
right.
News.
Right.
What are you most proud of? Like, five terms. I mean, there's a lot of stuff, but what are a couple of items that you can look back and say that you...
Did you just say items? Sorry.
Should tell the story.
Inside joke.
Yes. Okay, issues or whatever. What are a couple of issues that you can say, you can look back five terms and say, I individually, as a member of Congress, made a difference for the better on that?
So I can narrow it down to a couple things, although it won't encapsulate everything that we've been able to accomplish. I mean, I can tell you I've always strived and have surrounded myself with the best of the best. And as a team, we have worked collectively on behalf of our district and looked for every opportunity to put Alabama first. I mean, that's our priority, right? And so I'll start with the military. We're so excited. I don't even know how to put into words how awesome it's going to be to have this F-35 mission at the 187th. We saved some C-130s at the 908th. We've worked tirelessly to promote Air University and professional military education. We have, in my opinion, secured Fort Rucker as the Army Aviation Center for Excellence for many, many years to come. We avoided severe sequestration cuts that would have impacted our military footprint in Alabama. So to fight on behalf of the warfighters has been truly one of the most rewarding things that I've been able to do. Our veterans, we have a lot of work left to do, but at the end of this next year and however many months, my goal is to be able to look our veterans in the eye and say, we've made improvements, whereas it may not be perfect. Over the last 5 years, we've come a very long way from where we started when we uncovered all of the mismanagement that was taking place and abuse. I mean, it was just insane what we uncovered, and you were right there with us when it all happened and very involved in that. And I know that the VA is better today than it was when we found it, but again, we still have a lot of work to do. Agriculture, number one employer in the state of Alabama. I've been on the front lines for two farm bills, and also we just secured disaster relief for those affected by Hurricane Michael. You know, again, making sure that our farmers can provide food and fiber for our community, state, and the world. That's been a huge privilege. And then I'd just add one more thing. Although, again, the list could be long, but the privilege to fight for the unborn, those that don't have a voice. And I never imagined all those years ago when I served on the board at Save a Life, because I felt called to the pro-life community, that I would then have a seat in Congress to be able to be right in the thick of making sure that we're doing everything that we can to protect the unborn. So I could go on and on. I mean, there have been small moments, there have been big moments. But I'm gonna say this, some of the greatest joy that I have experienced in this job has been our constituent services. The way our office, and all credit goes to the people I have around me, the way our office has interacted with those who have walked through the door truly, in some cases, at the end of their rope, just about to give up. And our office has gone to bat for every single constituent, no matter how big or how small their problem may be, and delivered results that have changed people's lives for the better. And I think if there were a legacy, it would be that the people of Alabama's 2nd District know how deeply I have cared for them and how deeply I will continue to care about our state.
You said you weren't, you know, you didn't know what's next, right? You don't know what's next. Generally, I was curious, though, do you expect it to be in public life in some way? Not necessarily elected life, but just public life generally. Do you want to still be, or do you want to sit behind a desk and not have to be giving speeches and things?
You know, I don't really know. I know that I'm not going to be on the ballot in 2020. And beyond that, everything's on the table. I mean, honestly, I said earlier that this is prayerful consideration, and I have peace about where I am right now, but I want to be used where God wants to use me. And, you know, I want to be in a situation where, you know, work-life balance can be good. You know, we all strive for that in anything that we do. But I just don't know. I really don't know. The reason I announced when I did is because I wanted to create that space, A, for a good competitive election, right? And B, for myself and my family, for us to see what's next. And in the meantime, I get to do my job, which I love. And so I'll keep you posted. But right now, the only thing I can guarantee is that my name's not on the ballot in 2020.
Well, a lot of people are putting their names on the ballot right now. They're lining up to try to fill your shoes. What advice do you have for those who are running, anybody considering running? What advice do you have for them?
First and foremost, your loved ones, your spouse, your family, they have to be 100% behind you. There can't be any question once you start down this road at any point in time that somebody that you love and that you live with didn't want to do this in the first place. It's too hard. And on some days, your families are your family's your only friend. And so you gotta have the people that love you the most and care about you the most 100% committed to doing this. And then, you know, that's the most important thing. I've had a lot of conversations as you can imagine, so has my staff, with people thinking about doing this.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, somebody said to me, one of my soon-to-be colleagues when I was a candidate said, this is a big deal. And I kind of stepped back and thought, okay, that sounds a little condescending. Like, what, you think I'm not up for this? It is a big deal. It's a very big deal. It is a very big responsibility. You are participating in a process that affects outcomes in people's everyday lives. It is a big deal. And so I would just say to anybody thinking about running for this, to please really...
don't take it lightly.
Don't take it lightly. I mean, you know, pray for discernment and wisdom to make the right decision. It's not a small thing. And then I've offered myself up to anybody who wants to have a conversation about it. I'm happy to tell you the good, bad, and the ugly.
I think you just did it again.
I think it's mostly good that I would share with anybody. But it is, I mean, it's a grind. It's a tough job. You're not only commuting on an airplane every week, trying to balance, you know, everything, but it's a big district geographically. It's 15 counties, and if you're going to be an effective congressman, you got to get around and see the people that you represent.
Okay. Ruby out.